The American Association for the Surgery of Trauma and Trauma Surgery and Acute Care Open are privileged to publish The History of Harborview Medical Center and the Washington State Trauma System, authored by Eileen Bolger, Janet Griffith-Cassidy, and Ron Mayer. We're fortunate today that Eileen Bolger could spend a few minutes discussing this important contribution. Eileen, we began organizing a trauma system in Tennessee about the same time as you did in Washington. There was a lot of friction encountered by the interests of several stakeholder groups, most prominently the State Hospital Association, State Medical Association, and some specialty societies. They were most interested in keeping the status quo and delivering injured patients to the nearest hospital. Could you comment on the early Washington experience relative to those types of political issues?
Yeah, I think things were a little bit different in Washington in that there was a recognition around that time that there was a need. There were some high-profile cases of rural fatalities, and there was a feeling amongst the medical community that there was a problem that needed to be addressed. As a result of that, I think what was really smart is that the DOH brought together a very wide stakeholder engagement process where they developed committee structures that really engaged the providers at every level across the continuum of care and all of the major organizations. And they spent about 2 years studying the problem. They got some funding from the legislature to support a study where they could prospectively track trauma patients across the state and tracked over 4,000 patients. That, you know, gave them data to drive their decisions. And really looked at it as a statewide problem in need of a solution. So I think that wide stakeholder engagement overcame a lot of that potential resistance.
Well, it sounds like Washington is a much more civilized state maybe than Tennessee.
Well, I can't comment on that.
Okay. Similarly, trauma center designation has always generated controversy, and it remains so today. The for-profit hospitals in many areas of the country have aggressively entered the arena in recent years. Washington has developed a truly inclusive system. Could you describe how population, demography, and burden of injury factored into your rational approach to this?
Yeah, I think that, again, at the time that we were developing the system, it certainly wasn't the time where trauma care was seen as profitable. And so some of the biggest concerns among centers that were thinking about designation was the burden of uncompensated care that they might have to endure. But I think that, again, the state took a very thoughtful approach to this. We intentionally designed an inclusive system where we designate from level one all the way to level five, which allowed us to engage particularly the rural hospitals and the critical access hospitals in parts of the state where there really is no other medical care as part of the trauma system. So I think, you know, reaching out and including all of those hospitals in the process was very beneficial. And then, you know, as we'll talk a little bit more about funding, I think there was a recognized need that we had to provide some financial support to centers that were going to participate in this process. But the end result of that whole process was that by developing regions around the state and deciding to designate centers based on population need, using the data from the original study that was done, allowed each region to set minimum and maximum numbers for each level of trauma center that would meet the needs of their population. And that has held through to today, where each regional council has these minimum and maximum numbers, which can be changed as population grows or you know, there's an influx of people into a certain region, but that has to be based on a need, and that need has to be presented through the region and approved by the region and then presented to the state steering committee before another trauma center can be added to a region if they're already at their maximum numbers. So I think that allows us to at least deal with some of these concerns that have popped up around the country about for-profit hospitals that want an inroad into the system. You really have to demonstrate a need before they can come aboard. You can't open a level 2 center across the street from an already existing level 2 center if there's not a need for that that is approved by both the region and the state.
Along similar lines, transfers account for 50% of Harborview's admissions. Can you describe the triage patterns and points of origin for the transfers from the levels 2 through 5 and the population of the state, et cetera. Having one trauma center seems small, but I don't understand all the population demographics.
Yeah, sure. So the population of Washington State as a whole is about 7.3 million, and about 2 million of those people live in King County, which is the county immediately surrounding Seattle. So, you know, the vast majority of our population is concentrated in major sort of urban suburban centers along the I-5 corridor in western Washington, and then, you know, sort of a secondary population blip in around Spokane in eastern Washington. So there's a large rural part of the state in between those two that is growing, but still in many areas very rural. So when this system was being designed, there was a lot of discussion. Already at that time, Harborview had become sort of the default trauma center for complex care based on the way that Harborview developed and the University of Washington faculty, and G. Tom Shires, who was here at the time, had recruited a lot of people, including Carrico and people like that, who, you know, really had an interest in trauma. And so Harborview was already playing that role, essentially, as a level one trauma center before the trauma system really existed. And there was a lot of discussion around what is the need in the state, and the feeling was that we really should concentrate the high-level resources for level one care in a single center, but make sure that we have strategically placed level twos in urban centers around surrounding the level one and in eastern Washington, to address access to care. And then the rest of the state would be blanketed with, you know, level threes, fours, and fives to allow a good flow of patients into either the level twos or the level ones. So really a regionalized approach. Today, about 50% of our high ISS transfers, high ISS patients, so ISS over 15, about 50% of those are transfers in. I would say a fair number of those come from the other level threes in King County. So King County, again, being that most populous county, does not have a level two. So they have level threes and fours around us that all feed all their high injury severity patients directly into us. And then we get a fair number from other parts of the state that either will either go to a level two, or if they're not close to level two, will fly into us. We also have a catchment area that extends beyond the state. So we receive patients out of Southeast Alaska and various other parts of Alaska, because Alaska has limited access that doesn't have a level one center. So for some very high-end specialty care, they need to send patients down. And Southeast Alaska is about equidistant between us and Anchorage, where the closest level two is. So they will frequently send patients south. And we also get a lot of patients out of western Montana, so the western half of Montana, by air as well. So it's a pretty wide catchment area in that regard.
Yeah, you certainly have one of the larger catchment areas in the country. Uncompensated care has been a serious threat to systems throughout the country since the inception. It's often resulted in compromise or closure of several centers. Many of those have been safety net hospitals similar to Harborview. It appears the state of Washington has fared better, probably due to a more equitable financial structure. Let me ask you a series of associated questions. And starting, can you describe the current Harborview rate of uncompensated care and how the state is covering uncompensated care?
Yeah, so it's been an interesting evolution. So, you know, traditionally Harborview has provided a very high rate of uncompensated care, particularly for trauma. But what has happened with the expansion of Medicaid, which under the Affordable Care Act, our state was very aggressive, early adopter of expansion of Medicaid, has allowed us to actually shift a lot of our truly uncompensated, you know, totally self-pay patients into a Medicaid coverage plan. And so our rate of truly completely uncompensated care is actually fairly low now, under 5%. But I would say that, even Medicaid rates in most states would be considered undercompensated relative to the costs. And so what our state has done to deal with that is that we have a trauma care fund. And so there is a surcharge on every new vehicle purchase and on every moving violation. So if you get a speeding ticket, there's a surcharge on the speeding ticket. And that money goes into a dedicated fund that can only be used for the trauma system. That's been in place for, since about 1997. And that money is then used by the DOH to provide both participation grants to trauma centers. So there's a formula based on the level of trauma center, the number of patients they care for, and the severity of injury of patients they care for that that gives the hospitals some financial support. And there's also a formula where some of that money is funneled through the Medicaid program so that there is supplemental funding for trauma patients that are either of high injury severity or that require transfer, or for pediatric patients, which allows the hospitals and physician practices to get supplemental Medicaid funding for those types of patients. This system is, I think, pretty impressive in that it's been able to sort of maintain the livelihood of county hospitals like Harborview, and has also supported participation in the system in a way that that allows it to be sustainable.
In our place in Memphis, we also have multi-states, including Mississippi, Arkansas, and bits of Missouri, and politicians are constantly working on trying to get, reimbursement for some of the injury care from those areas. Given the fact that you have Alaska and Wyoming and the other counties in Washington, is there any reimbursement provided by those entities for supportive injury care?
Yeah, so no is a simple answer. We don't get any reimbursement from outside the state, other than standard, whatever their standard Medicaid insurance might be. But I will say that while the hospital is a county hospital in that it is, the buildings are owned by the county, and if we want to build a new building, we get bond funding and support from the taxpayers to build a new building. The operating funds of the hospital are completely independent of that. So there's no direct county taxpayer support to the operating funds of the hospital. The hospital has to be self-sustaining. And so there's no contribution to this uncompensated care other than the state funding that I discussed.
Okay, let me go into one other important area before we finish. Non-trauma surgical emergencies are a very important component of the advancing field of acute care surgery today. Those cases are often delayed, and lack of organization leads to preventable morbidity and mortality. It's been suggested that those disease entities might best be handled by a regionalized system similar to how trauma systems have been set up. However, I suspect the previously discussed political turmoil generated during the early development of systems in many areas of the country might pale in comparison. Has there been any discussion in Washington State relative to these issues, and how do you see things moving forward both in Washington and nationally relative to non-trauma surgical emergencies?
Yeah, I think that's a great question because I think this is probably the future of regionalized medicine. We have dipped our toe into this water, not in other non-trauma surgical emergencies, but in cardiac and stroke care, which is also a time-sensitive disease process. And we actually have state legislation to establish cardiac and stroke systems, and we are working, through that process of designating those hospitals for different levels of cardiac and stroke care. And so that has been a much broader political discussion because it's a much bigger public health issue that every hospital wants to care for those patients in some way. So it's been a very interesting process to watch, and it has really mirrored on the trauma system. I think that is the future of how we're going to deal with these time-sensitive disease processes that require emergency access to high-level care within medicine. For other surgical emergencies, for example, like things like necrotizing soft tissue infections, we have sort of by default regionalized those to Harborview because we have the burn center and the trauma center and a sort of research interest in this area. We've made that known. They're tough patients to take care of, and so we have a very high volume of that surgical problem because people are very willing and happy to send those on. You know, they're very resource-intensive patients and difficult to manage. So I think in areas like that where there's very little controversy, that sort of happens by default. But in areas like cardiac, stroke, and probably other acute general surgical emergencies, we probably do need to think carefully about how we regionalize them. But it is probably the best for the patients to get more timely access to care.
Well, I mean, the combined dedication of the state of Washington and the faculty of the University of Washington have really provided an outstanding example for the United States of how to establish an excellent inclusive trauma system. The EMS system there is a national leader in pre-hospital care of all emergencies, and the collaboration between Harborview and Washington EMS has led advances in pre-hospital and hospital research that have translated into improving outcomes for victims of serious injury. Thank you very much for this manuscript, which outlines the roadmap you all have taken. Do you have any other words of wisdom before we sign off today?
No, except to say that I, you know, certainly feel blessed to have trained and to be able to work in this system. And our hope is that the lessons learned that we've tried to put together in this publication will be helpful to other states or regions that are looking at how to optimize their trauma system or trauma care, and hopefully also maybe a roadmap for regionalization of other time-sensitive diseases, as we were just talking about.
Great. Thank you very much, Eileen.
Okay, thanks, Tim. Yep.